5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
I know you're gonna dig this.
Welcome to the Barrett Sports Media Podcast.
Think we could listen to the radio or something?
Radio? Who needs a radio?
Featuring the biggest names and newsmakers from the world of sports media.
Don't act like you're not impressed.
Now, here's your host, the president of Barrett Sports Media, Jason Barrett.
Welcome in, one and all, to another rendition of the Barrett Sports Media Podcast. I am your host, Jason Barrett. This is the seventh episode of Season 2, and today I've got a real treat for you. A conversation with one of the true pioneers of the sports talk format. The great Jim Rome stops by for a 40-minute discussion on his career and a number of issues pertaining to the sports media industry. So stick around for that. It's coming up in just a little bit. As always, my thanks to each of you for listening to the podcast and retweeting the content on Twitter. It helps a great deal. I've casually mentioned this before, but haven't really pressed it as much as I probably should have. But guys, it really helped me out if you took a minute or two to leave a review for the podcast on iTunes. Discovery and ascension up the charts doesn't happen simply by gaining clicks. It takes word of mouth as well. If you share with the world why you enjoy or value what I'm doing, it does me a tremendous favor, so I thank you guys in advance for helping out. Over the past few weeks, I've been traveling a lot, which has made it harder to produce a 5-and-5. Today's episode, though, will indeed have one. I do want to tell you that I'm in Austin, Texas this week for the NAB radio show, so if you're in the industry and attending the conference and want to say hello, shoot me an email at jbarrett@sportsradiopd.com, and maybe we'll cross paths along the way. Also, you may have noticed that we've added a few writers to the sportsradiopd.com website. I've been inundated with emails to contribute, and I sincerely appreciate the interest in getting involved. I'm planning to add a few more people. The areas of focus I'm working on next include podcast reviews, writing radio and TV news, conducting research pieces on brands and individuals, plus I'm considering a few columns on play-by-play and social media. If you're interested, jbarrett@sportsradiopd.com is the email. If you've already sent in your materials, stay patient. I'm hoping to go through all of them over the next week and respond to everyone who took the time to reach out. But all of that's got little to do with today's episode, and boy, has there been a ton going on recently in sports media. I could have probably have done a 10 and 10 this week, but instead you guys will have to make do with a 5 and 5.
There are 5 minutes remaining.
Talk about a rough week for Sports Radio 950 KJR in Seattle. First, the radio station was brought into the headlines after the Seattle Times announced they were banning their writers from appearing on the radio station. But that news pales in comparison to the firestorm that was created when morning host Mitch Levy was arrested for allegedly soliciting a prostitute as part of a sting operation led by Bellevue Police. If I were in Levy's shoes, I'd hire the best lawyers and investigators money can buy and fight to prove the authorities were incorrect, because losing this case could mean the end of my career. If I'm in KJR's position, who's doing my morning show for the foreseeable future? It's impossible to keep a host on the air who has that black cloud lingering above their head. Is a client going to want to spend money to associate themselves with Mitch at this point? Are listeners going to tune into a guy who's going through a public case? The best that each side can hope for is that Levy is eventually found innocent, but that could take months, which means right now, it's best for Mitch to focus on his personal challenges and for KJR to move forward in the interim without him. ESPN Radio's Ryan Russillo was on vacation in Wyoming and arrested after being found drunk, naked, and in a stranger's bedroom in the wrong condo. Russillo obviously didn't intend to wander into the wrong home, but alcohol got the better of him and put him in an embarrassing situation. As a result, ESPN Radio suspended him, and although I'm sure Ryan is disappointed, frustrated, and embarrassed by what took place, I commend his employer for not overreacting. This was a mistake, but nobody was harmed more than Ryan. For the past decade, Russillo has been a model employee, and the act in question wasn't severe enough to cost the man his career. That's not excusing Ryan from using poor judgment and screwing up, but a suspension here seems punishment enough. In Philadelphia, 97.5 The Fanatic has chosen to pursue new leadership by parting ways with program director Matt Nahigian. As someone who was initially hired to build this station when it was known as Sports Talk 950, I can't tell you how much respect I have for the job Matt did. In 2006, when I moved to Philadelphia, that radio station was a mess. It was heavily syndicated, airtime was bought by people who didn't belong on the air, but there were a few valuable parts inside the operation. Any thought of beating WIP, though, and earning recognition for a Marconi Award? Well, that simply didn't exist. Over the past decade, the station moved to FM, landed the Flyers and Sixers, hired Mike Missanelli, Anthony Gargano, and Tony Bruno, just to name a few, and in the process became a formidable foe for WIP and caused them to rebuild the majority of their lineup. I'm not sure why the two sides have split up, but I tip my cap to him for a job well done. I hope that he and the Fanatic both remain successful going forward. Radio conferences can become pretty boring when you sit through session after session listening to industry people tout their 97% reach and cling to buzzwords such as ROI, mergers, and the played-out phrase, content is king, distribution is queen. But there's just a different vibe at the Podcast Movement Conference because the focus is more on performance, storytelling, and research. That's not to suggest that all of the sessions are the equivalent of a thrill ride, because they're not. But when you're in a room listening to Bruce Pritchard, Eric Newsom, or Paul Culligan, it's different than the normal stuff. There were a few traditional sessions too, two of which provided excellent data thanks to Larry Rosen and Steve Goldstein. I'm often asked if it's worth it to attend, and while I can't tell you how to spend your money or the company's dollars, if education means something to you, investing in knowledge and insight is never a bad purchase. As much fun as we have in sports media, it all goes out the window when you're faced with a situation like our friends in Houston have been over the past 2 weeks, thanks to Hurricane Harvey. Being trapped in your home, watching it slowly get destroyed, and not being able to go to work is downright scary, let alone dealing with the possibility of your life being in danger. As frightening as the developments have been, I was truly moved by the way I've seen the sports radio community come together to help. Stations across the country have used their airwaves and online platforms to raise money. And local rivalries and the stress of ratings books have gone out the window in Houston as hosts took to the streets and in some cases the waters to help their neighbors. We're often drawn to the next big thing in media, whether it's podcasting, HD2 radio, or voice technology, but when it really matters most, live and local radio delivers for its community. And no matter how much we try to elevate everything else, let's never lose sight of that, because the community you live in could be relying on it next. And that, my friends, wraps up this week's 5 and 5. Feel free to share your thoughts on any of the topics I brought up by reaching me on Twitter at SportsRadioPD or by email at jbarrett@sportsradiopd.com. It's now time to bring you my featured conversation, and this week it takes place with someone who has created a lasting impact on the sports talk format. That would be the leader of the clones, Jim Rome. He's delivered his brand of smack talk for over 25 years, occupied the airwaves on multiple sports radio national networks, created an impression on sports television, and whether you've loved him or hated him, you've been well aware of his impact. I had the pleasure of spending 40-plus minutes with Jim in his studio in Irvine, California, sorting through the early days of his career, the stops along the way, and the current state of today's sports media industry. He could not have been more gracious with his time or more open with his answers. I haven't had a ton of experience with Jim during my career. We've crossed paths a time or two, but never for a long period of time. But every time I've been around him, I've genuinely walked away impressed. This was an interview I looked forward to conducting, and I think you guys are going to enjoy it. So on that note, I'm going to shut up now and just let you hear it.
3, 2, 1.
All right, so Jim, we know where we are now, but this all had to start from somewhere. You paid your dues on a small market, just like many of us. So why don't we go back there? When did the radio bug catch you, and when did you get rolling?
It's good to see you, bro. First of all, Jason, really nice to have you here. You know, I'm like a lot of guys that you talk to in this business. Where I grew up, I was obsessed with sports, loved it. It was that kid that when I was in second grade, my father taught me how to read the sports page. I'd fight him every single morning for it. Just absolutely loved it. And of course, was going to grow up and dominate and play in the NFL. And if not in the NFL, then certainly Major League Baseball. And then I turned 12 and I figured out that was not going to happen. But man, I loved it. I was just absolutely obsessed with sports. And then I figured out if I can't play the game, there's got to be a way to stay in the game. And I got the radio bug very early on. So even when there was not a lot of talk radio and not a lot of things going on, I just knew that that might be a way for me to stay in the game. So my one edge was I knew right when I got to college. In fact, I knew in high school. I knew exactly what I wanted to do. And where most of the guys I knew coming up wanted to be in play-by-play, I didn't want to do that. I wanted to do a show. Mm-hmm. And there weren't a lot of shows. But I just felt like I have a different approach. I've got lots of takes and opinions. I want to interview athletes. I want to be a radio host, and I'm going to go to a college, go to the dorm, and go right to the radio station, and that's what I did. I knew early on what I wanted, and I knew the price that I was willing to pay.
So you bring up that back then there weren't a lot of shows. Sports radio didn't exist. I mean, you had WFAN come on the scene. How are you going to do a show in a business that yet doesn't exist?
It's a great question. It's a really, really good question. There was almost no sports talk radio. When I grew up in Los Angeles, I was an LA native. I was a Dodger fan. I would listen to Dodger talk all the time when I was a kid. But in terms of sports talk radio, there was FAN, and that was it. That was it. When I got my first big break on 690 AM, I can remember being in the newsroom at KTMS in Santa Barbara, KTMS 1250, and I was in the newsroom. I did traffic reports, $5 an hour. I would do traffic reports, and I did some sports updates, and I would just kind of hover over the AP. Remember the old AP ticker machines? And I'll never forget it. This thing spit out a story, 690 AM is going all sports. And I'm like, damn, that's it. That's what I'm going to do. I'm going to work at that radio station. But as a kid growing up, there really wasn't very much of that at all. But they would have post-game Dodger talk. And even as a kid, I would listen to that. But as I started to get older, I used to turn it over in my mind, like, what's going on here? It's some guy with some amazing voice who would have a caller call up and say, hey, great show. What do you think about the rotation? I'll take your answer off the air. And I'm like, man, that's just not that interesting.
Right.
It's not that interesting. If I could ever do this, I would give them my takes and my thoughts, and I'd let it rip. So you're right. The format didn't really exist, but I was kind of already turning over my mind. I want to be on the radio. I want to get a radio show, and if I had a radio show, what would I do?
So you get the traffic gig. You're paying your dues. You mentioned San Diego is going all sports, and that's where you finally get a break. How did that all go down where you land on the scene in San Diego?
It was an amazing thing. So I'm in Santa Barbara, and 690 was like this 50,000-watt blowtorch. Mm-hmm. So that thing blew right through Los Angeles all the way up the coast. And when they went all sports, I immediately started to hammer that radio station with phone calls. And understand, there's not the internet, there's not cell phones. I'm just doing this by mail, by phone. And I got a list of everybody who worked at the station, like the local sales manager, the general sales manager, the news director. And every time I hit one of them, if they didn't respond, I'd hit the next guy with the same letter, the same resume, the same rap. And I couldn't get anybody to pay attention. And then something happened. There were all these fires in Santa Barbara one year. In fact, there's always fires in Santa Barbara. And what happened was all these other radio stations were calling our station because we were the only news talk station, and they always wanted to interview somebody for an update. And whenever it went down, there's always this frenzy in the newsroom, like, damn, who can do the interview? I'm like, I'm going to wait by that phone, and every time a radio station in a major market calls, I will do the interview and then take that pressure off everybody else, knowing that I'm getting an audition every single time. Finally, there's a guy named Hal Brown. Love this guy. News director at 690 AM. And he said to somebody in the newsroom, man, this guy Rome in Santa Barbara, he's good. We should hire him as a news reporter. And one of the guys goes, wake up, man. He does sports. He bothers us all the time. He's always calling. So finally, Hal Brown calls me up one day and he says, hey, Jim, listen, you've been calling us. You've been bothering us. Here's the deal. We have an audition for you. You come down here. You try out for this station. We're going to put you on the air. If you get it, you stay. If you don't, we don't ever want to hear from you ever again. So I go to my boss in Santa Barbara, and I say to my boss, I've got vacation time accrued. I'm going to go to 690. I mean, I had to be straight up. I'm going to 690. I'm going to try out. He said, no, you're not. I said, wait, what? He says, you're not going anywhere. I said, listen, I've got vacation time. Everybody in this town knows this is my dream. He says, you're not going. And I'm scared now because I make $1,200 a month,
right,
working 100 hours a week, and I got nowhere to go. There's no other opportunity. I said, are you telling me that I can't go? He said, that's exactly what I'm telling you. I looked at him, and I'm telling you, Jay's not, I'm terrified, but I looked at him. I said, look, I'm going. I'm just going. I'm going to burn the boats, and I'm going because this is what I want. And right before I leave, this guy grabs me by the arm, and he stops me and says, hey, Jim, hey, listen, if you don't get it, you can still work here. But we know you're going
to
get it. I'm like, of course I can still work here, man.
Just have to put you through the agony of it,
no,
right?
I can still work here because I'm working 120 hours a week for $1,200 a month. Of course I can still work here. I'm triple shifting for you. But that, essentially, there's a little more to it, but that was the gist of it. I went down there. I checked into an Easy 8 motel next to the radio station. And at night, I'd stress and eat Oreos and drink Coors Light and wonder how I did the day before. And all my friends were calling me up going, dude, slow down. You were talking way too fast. You sound nervous. So that was my audition.
So you get the break in San Diego. You wind up on 690. And these are the early days of the format. Yet, you weren't there 10 years building towards syndication. This thing takes off pretty quick. You're not even 30 when you hit syndication, right?
I think I might. No, no. So what happened was I got there in December of 1990. They brought me in to do sports updates and a weekend talk show. Mm-hmm. And can you imagine doing a show in Santa Barbara 1 hour a night? And there's two phone lines, literally two phone lines. And I can remember grinding, getting to like 42 past the hour. There are no calls. I've done the one interview. And how am I going to get through 16 more minutes with nothing left?
Right.
I mean, I've done it all. And now I'm sitting here in front of a bank of phone lines, like six lines, eight lines, 50,000 watt blowtorch, 4 hours, and I'm talking to people in towns I've never even heard of, and I'm doing it on the weekend. Man, it was bright lights, big city. So I get there in December of 90, and then they put me on the night show later in 1991, the night show being 7 to midnight, and I'm just gunning. I'm just doing what I'm doing, and people really had never done that before. And then this book comes about, the book comes back, and the station's just not really doing well at all. And all of a sudden, I pull like a 5 share at night. And it's got to be like some crazy anomaly. Why everybody else is nowhere near this? What's that crazy nut at night doing pulling a 5? They pulled me off the night. They put me into the midday.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm gunning in the midday. And then all of a sudden, John Lynch, who owned the radio station, comes to me one day and says, Jim, I'm thinking about this. Why don't we syndicate the show? I said, that's the best idea I've ever heard. Because you know what I was doing back then? It was always local, local, local. So every single year, we talk about the same things, pound the same topics, day after day after day. Why wouldn't this work someplace else? What if we can try it someplace else? And it became grassroots, and we just tried it. We got 4 affiliates, we got 6 affiliates, and we just started to go to
work.
What
were those first 4 affiliates?
It's an amazing thing. It's an amazing thing. So, you know, the rap early on was, and again, this is nothing like the way the world is right now, where you go to a major syndicator, and you've got 100 or 150 or 200 stations. We
right.
had to go knock on doors.
Yeah.
And the first 4, the original 4 Jungle affiliates were Albuquerque, Rochester, Denver, and Vegas.
So now your approach to content quickly changes. You're talking about these towns because they're important. You're trying to show other markets that, hey, look, I do give the attention so that you guys pick me up. But that had to be a test of your psyche at the time, too, because now you're talking about Rochester. Like, you're not talking about sports there in San Diego, but now you all of a sudden you have to shift your mentality to make sure that these stations like you and it gets around
right.
that others pick you up, right?
How do you do that? It was really challenging. Like, for so long, I just talked regional sports. And then plus the rap early on was, yeah, he's killing it in San Diego. He's killing it in LA, but that won't work here.
Right.
That's not going to work here.
Mm-hmm.
So then I've got this chip on my shoulder like, yes, it will. Yes, it will. I believe in myself and my product. How am I going to make it work there? What am I going to talk to Albuquerque about in Vegas, in Rochester? So then we had to make that thing work. What was really interesting was one of the biggest topics on the show has always been the show. And it was fascinating to see my longtime listeners and how they reacted to listeners out of state. In other words, they crushed them. They killed them. Every time we added a new affiliate, there was this crazy hazing process where you had to see how they'd react and how if they could handle getting hammered. And some did better than others, but off and running. Then all of a sudden, we're in these new markets and we're talking to new listeners about their topics.
So Premier now starts to help this show grow.
So we're not a Premier yet. So I'm at Noble.
Okay.
I'm at Noble. And then Craig Kitchen et al. At Premier approach Noble. And they want to buy my contract. They want to get into long-form programming. They were doing comedy and things like that. And John Lynch, who came up with the idea initially, comes to me and says, Jim, listen, it's great. It's going well. I don't think I can get you to the next level. We're going to do this deal with Premier Radio Networks. So then I go to work for Premier in Los Angeles, and then they take the show.
It's cool of John just to think that way, because how many guys would just hold on to what they consider an asset and not do that deal for the betterment of the show and for someone's career?
John was way ahead of his time. John was an unbelievable visionary for this business. Remember back in the day, and you probably remember this, back in the day, he had the largest broadcast corporation in America, which was Noble Broadcast, and I think they had 23 stations. Mm-hmm. So he was kind of ahead of his time, and he saw things before they happened, and you're right, that was very good. He always had my back, and he understood that.
So when you make the jump, and now you're with Premier, take me through the affiliate growth, because that thing started to blossom pretty quick.
No, it did, because when we were syndicating with Noble Broadcast, there was another great guy, a guy by the name of Brian Purdy, mm-hmm. who's had a really, really good...
Yeah, Dallas.
Yeah, he's awesome. Brian's an amazing guy. He's had a great broadcast career. He literally, of all people, Brian was the guy who was getting affiliates for our show back at Noble. So he was like a one-man guy, but all of a sudden now we go to Premier and they're building out the operation and they've got an affiliates person or two and they've got salespeople and now we've got a more concerted effort and we're doing it the way we should be doing it and then the thing is growing. So instead of going 4 affiliates to 8 affiliates to 12, all of a sudden we've got 20 and then we've got 40 and then we've got 50 and it's growing quickly.
And so now all that stuff you were talking about, believing in yourself and knowing what you want to do, you're starting to see, here's the big picture. How long till TV starts to enter the picture
for
you?
So TV was in there even before Premier. So I get to Premier at 1996. In 1993, I get a phone call from ESPN, mm-hmm. and ESPN is going to start ESPN2, and they want to have a West Coast presence, and they want to have a live talk show, and they want to do it 1 hour a night. So at this point, I'm still doing 4 hours of radio, and then I'm going to do 1 hour of live TV on ESPN2. So that's when I got my first legitimate TV break. Prior to that, I did some TV where I'd appear on Roy Firestone's show. Mm-hmm. And I think probably they saw me there, and I think probably they had heard the radio noise on the West Coast. They needed the West Coast presence, so I got an audition, and then I got that job.
Now, were you interested and excited about TV, or were you I'm the radio guy, I don't really need TV?
It was both. I was the radio guy who knew that I did not have a TV opportunity if not for that radio show. Mm-hmm. Hey, understand this about the radio thing. I have immense respect, admiration, and appreciation for the platform, for people who do it, for people who do it well. And anything that I've ever had in this business above and beyond or next to the radio show is because of the radio show. Mm-hmm. It's always been the franchise, the platform, everything I started. So the answer to the question, I was really, really interested in trying TV, but I didn't know if I was going to be good at it or if I'd make it. And I knew that the reason I had the opportunity was radio.
Now, as TV is starting to go, you go through, and you've talked about this numerous times, so I don't want to spend too much time on it, but as you're rising, everything's going great, radio's taking off, TV's taking off, you go through your adversity moment, right? There's a young guy right now probably listening to this going, I want to be on the Jim Rohn track, what do I do if I ever find myself in that tough spot? How did that change you in how you approach things after you went through what you went through at ESPN?
You're talking about Jim Everett?
Yeah.
Okay, so my thing was, on the way up, I had kind of a two-prong approach to everything. I had my content radio approach, where what am I going to do with my craft? How am I going to get better at this? And if I get the opportunity, what am I going to do with it? Mm-hmm. You know, tangibly, what's that radio show going to look like? And how do I get better as a broadcast personality? And then on the other side, and I was working this constantly always, I tried to figure out a way mentally to get myself into a place to compete in that arena. In other words, I knew it was going to be a really tough haul in that business. There were not a lot of opportunities. So early on, I was asking myself, I think, the right questions. Like, why you? Why you? Who's going to put you on the radio? Who the hell are you? You didn't play the game. You don't really have a great voice. Why you? So I was constantly working on my mind. You know, how do I do this? How do I do this? When the going gets tough, am I going to battle? Well, these are all easy things to talk about and tell yourself until the bullets start flying or you face some real adversity.
Right.
So luckily, when the tables turn, literally, and my man is not happy with me, and the heat comes down, now I'm faced with the first real adversity. I thought fighting my way out of a small market was tough, right, but this was real adversity. Now all of a sudden, I'm Tonya Harding. Now all of a sudden, everybody's coming for me. SNL is killing me. Katie Couric is killing me. I might lose my job. There was a headline in the LA Times which read, "The Fall of the Roman Empire. Is this the end of Jim Rome?" And I've told the story, but I took that newspaper article and I put it up in a mirror where I could see it every single day for about a year. And if the question is, you know, what were you thinking? What do you tell people? Well, all right, I'd pump myself up for this stuff for years. Hey, you're tough. You're mentally tough. Let's get it. Well, now it's here. Now it's at my doorstep. What am I going to do? Am I going to turtle? Or am I going to dig in and am I going to grind? Am I going to fight my way out of it? And my feeling was, I don't want them to rip this from me. I've been busting my ass. I've got a good future and a good career. I got to stay in battle. And my only way to battle, not to start any fights, but I'm just going to grind. I'm going to work, and I'm going to show that I had one really bad night. It was a bad night. I made a bad decision. My work's got to speak for itself. I will work and grind my way out of it. And I put my head down.
And I mean, TV at this point becomes a big platform for you. I mean, you had The Last Word, Jim Rome is Burning, Rome is Burning, Rome. I mean, you obviously, for everything you were doing that was successful on the radio end, now you're matching it with TV. How did that help the show?
You know, it's interesting. I think that people like to say, hey, yeah, but it made you a household name. Yeah, but it put you on the map. That's the reason you're here. Honestly, it's not true. I mean, it made me a household name. People knew me for that. But that's not what I wanted to be known for. I wanted to be known as a guy that worked really hard and did good shows and did good interviews. I didn't want to be known for that. You know, my favorite thing is, it's probably in the back of your mind, well, yeah, but it was a setup, right? No, that was not a setup. That was not intentional. That, contrary to what people think, I don't think that was great for me. And especially if you had to live it in that moment, it was not. I mean, literally, if these companies do not stand by me and I get fired, maybe I don't find my way back.
Right.
You know, if this happened today, would I be able to come back from it? I really don't know. It's a very different time. So I think that, yeah, overnight, everybody knew me, but that's not what I wanted to be known for. Again, bad night, bad decision. I wish it didn't happen. Now, because it did happen, one of my things has always been, you be responsible for what you do and what you say. You be accountable for what you do and what you say. And I did it. And that's me. And that's part of it. And now 20 years later, it's just one of those classic TV moments.
Right.
It's funny, but at the time, it wasn't funny to some people who were really angry.
Yep. But so now, as a guy who's had a lot of success on both platforms, how did you start to see the radio show change once you started doing TV? How did that help you with expanding the audience?
You know, it was always, okay, that was it. It was funny because I always thought when I got into TV that people just naturally followed me from radio to TV. Like they know I'm on TV because I'm on radio talking about TV, but that wasn't it. There were people that would see me on TV that would say, hey, great show.
Right.
Or your show sucks. And it was funny. I would always say back in the day, what show? Which show are you talking about? And they would say, oh, your TV show. Like, what other show? I said, I have a radio show. Do you not know that? No, I didn't even know you were on radio.
Yep.
So I found out that there were two different audiences. And there was crossover, for sure.
Yeah.
But yeah, I could direct one back to the other. But then it was also interesting in that people, the TV show was not the radio show because it was shorter. Frankly, I probably did not say things on TV that I said on the radio because I had a little more leeway on radio. And then some would say, I like your TV show, Rome, but it's not as good as your radio show.
Right.
So you could say certain things and do certain things on one, but not the other. And now it's really interesting because, by the way, and I think if people are being honest, maybe there's some things that you'll say on the radio, but you won't tweet.
Right.
Different context.
Totally.
Right?
Yeah.
Or some things you might say on TV that you wouldn't tweet. So all the platforms are different. I've noticed as I've gone through this, radio, TV, Twitter, Facebook, every platform is a little bit different. Content's king, but the platforms are different.
So now, you are doing some TV still, but you're not on there 5 days a week like you were before. Is that something that you still have ambition to do again, or are you satisfied with where you are?
No, I want that. I want that. And between you and me, I think I'm going to get that, and I think I'm going to get that sooner than later. So the TV I'm still doing right now is NFL and CBS, which I'll do 8 hits like I did last year in the New York studio. Now, when I came to CBS, the reason I came to CBS was they made this unbelievable offer to me across the board where I had the daily TV show that you were talking about. I had the Showtime show and I had the hits on CBS, on the NFL and CBS. So I'm doing all sorts of TV and then some of these things went away. But the answer to the question is I miss doing daily TV. I want to do daily TV. I think within the next year I will be doing daily TV. And then aside from that, we're always trying to develop things, and I am in discussions with some other people.
Well, speaking of that, I'd be remiss if I didn't ask you about one of those developments, because your name came up last year with the UFC. And the minute I heard about it, I went, man, would this be a perfect fit. This guy's an ultimate boxing fan who loves the sport, has had guys on. You've got that attitude and swagger that they look for. But I had never heard you calling play-by-play, so I'm going, right. I don't know how that's going to work. How much did you seriously consider that?
This is funny. This is one of those questions where, like, whenever I ask an athlete, like Dana White or something, a question that they really don't want to answer, they give me some answer I'm about to give you.
Right.
And I'm like, come on, man, give me something. You know, the answer, I guess, to the question is, I saw the same rumors. I heard the same things. People ask me a lot of things. I am a huge combat sports person. I love MMA. I respect what the UFC has done. Look, I like what I'm doing right now a lot. There's really nothing that I can share beyond that. Mm-hmm. If something were to happen, Jason, you'd probably know about it before me, and then you can run it back to me, and I'll give you my thought. But that's pretty much where I'm at right now.
You got it. So you did make a change going from Premier to CBS a few years ago. It's now been, what, 5 years?
Four plus.
So how has this helped you? What would you say, I guess, are the pros and cons of that change, going from Premier to CBS?
No cons. I mean, CBS, I said at the time, had a great run at Premier. I had a long time. I worked at Premier and had a really good run there and liked everybody I worked with, liked everybody I worked for, had a great run. But when CBS calls, you go. You pick up the phone. It's CBS. And there were so many other great opportunities across the board. And when CBS, especially CBS Radio and CBS Sports Radio, when I talked to Chris Olivero, and Chris Olivero is a guy, great broadcast pro, great broadcast executive. He laid out for me what his vision was. We are going to get into this space. We're going to have CBS Sports Radio. We would like you to be a very important part of this sports radio network. We can put you in markets where you have not been before. And, you know, in the back of my mind, I kept hearing CBS, CBS, CBS. So I like the plan, and it's been great. There have not been any cons. It's been an incredible move for me, and I'm very content where I'm working.
So when you look at where sports radio is now, think back to the early days of syndication, right? You're coming out, there's ESPN is in its infancy, sporting news comes around then, you got Premier where you start to blossom. Now look at the world. You've got Sirius, you've got NBC, CBS, Fox, ESPN, podcasts. The world is, and you just launched the podcast. Do we have too much content in this space now?
I mean, content's king, but there's a lot of content.
Yeah.
There is a lot of content. I can't stress this enough that you go back, let me just say this one more time. When I started and got my break, there were two sports talk stations in America. Two stations. At the height of this thing, we'd have four sports talk stations in any given market at any given time. And then, never mind the proliferation of stations, it's everything you're talking about right now. It's no longer like, even like when I used to do the stuff for ESPN, it was appointment viewing. Like I would go home, I'd watch that block, or even sports talk radio. You'd be in your car and you'd listen to it. It's content now. It's content on demand. You get it when you want it, where you want it, however you want it. And there's so much of it. I mean, back in the day when I did my tour stops, I can remember going into markets and I'd do these live shows that were not on air, but I'd go into these venues and there'd be 8,000, 12,000, 15,000. My God, we had 17,000 people in Sacramento, but the world was very different. Now there are podcasts and there are blogs. Look, you have one of these things, you have a show. So there's this fierce battle to be seen and be heard and to stand out. But you want to stand out for the right reasons and not the wrong reasons. So it's totally different. Here is a fierce fight to get your flag in the ground somewhere and make sure you have something that's significant to bring people to you.
I want to talk to you about something regarding market visits, because as you're starting your career, you're thinking about doing a great job on the air, having a great show, connecting with an audience. You start to learn that there's another side of this. There's the being a businessman, developing relationships with radio stations. I was fortunate. I had you and Craig come out to Philadelphia in 2006.
I remember that.
And I remember at the time, this is when Aaron Rowan had his face busted up. He came in the studio.
Yes.
And as a listener at that time, you and I had not met. And I'm thinking, all right, he's cocky and brash on the air. Is he going to be cool in the building? I don't know him. And I was blown away. And I've told this story to Craig at how you conducted yourself in the conference room with our sales team. Just, hey, if there's anything I can help you guys do to move business, here's my cell phone number. I'm going, this has to be an act. Now, keep in mind, I had spent 2 years at ESPN producing radio shows. Our guys didn't do that. So I'm sitting there going, really? This is how the other side works, and this is important. When did you realize how important that was to you and being able to get these stations to be on your side? Because as you know, they're going to come back and they're going to say, Jim, local is king. We need to be local. We don't know if national plays. But when you take those steps, it can change the game.
I appreciate you saying that. It's interesting. Here's the one thing I figured out. I grew up in a family business. I had a family business. My parents owned a company. They manufactured high-tech garments. And they had a factory in Southern California, and they ran this family business. And every single night at dinner, my dad was a big sports fan, as I mentioned. He was from Boston. But every night at dinner, my dad and my mom would talk business, and I would hear the same things over and over again. Business is business. Take care of the business. Take care of the business, and the business will take care of you. So I came from a family that had a couple of entrepreneurs, I guess, and I learned early on what a small business was like. And then what I wanted to do was treat my show or my broadcast business like a business, and I understood the business of the business. You know, contrary to, like, Rome, man, Rome must be the worst guy ever. What an ego. Say what you want and say what you want about the show, and I don't care. You're entitled to your opinion. You might even be right.
Right.
But I understood. I was never, like, radio guy. I ran it like a business, and I understood that it didn't matter how good or bad I was, whatever. If the salespeople didn't buy in and didn't push the product, I'd have nothing. You better understand what their challenges are. You better try and understand where they're coming from. I got a programmer. I got to answer to him. I better understand what the PD is thinking about the show. Now, I was going to stay on my ground every chance I could, because believe me, the salespeople and a PD or two asked me to do things I didn't think was right, and I would tell them so, but I wanted to run it like a business. So by the time I got to you in Philadelphia, be damn sure if I was going to stand in front of people in Philadelphia, I was going to let them know I am here for you. Mm-hmm. Let me help you, because I understood that this is a business. It's not the show. It's not the ego. It's not the rap, the smack. It's a business. And I got that early on.
I want to talk to you about some aspects of your show, because one thing that you've done really well over the course of time, you don't keep the length of time with these producers that you do if they don't do a good job and if you're not a guy that's fun to work with. Let's face it, guys don't stay in 5 to 10 year relationships if they're not having fun and enjoying it. And you've had a hell of a run with producers, whether it was Travis, Jay Stu, Kyle, who's now doing Good Morning Football, and now Hawk. What do you look for out of a producer, and how can you tell if it's a guy that you can build a long-term relationship with?
I've been lucky in that way. I've had really good people around me, TV and radio both. I mean, I even tell you, like, my team, I've had one attorney in 25 years. I've had two agents in 25 years. Mm-hmm. I've had very few producers in a business where there's turnover. So what am I looking for? I'm looking for somebody as smart or smarter than me, which is not that hard, honestly. But I mean this sincerely. I want people around me that will make me look better, that will make the show sound smarter. I want people that will not tell me what I want to hear, but rather what they really believe and what they think that I should hear. I do not want yes people. I want people that can make everything better. And I've been very lucky to be around extremely talented, motivated people. Now, the one thing I will say, I need people that will grind. We work really hard, and I'm not looking for any points. I'm not that smart. I haven't figured out any shortcuts. We come in very early. This crew, I'm on the air at 9. These guys are here at 5 a.m. And you might say, what the hell is that for? What do you do between 5 and 9? I'd rather not get into that, but we do come in really early every single day. Mm-hmm. So I'm looking for guys that are various and gals that are smart, talented, and that will grind, because I've done this thing now almost 30 years. I'm working as hard now as I ever have. I love it as much as I ever have, but we will grind. We will grind.
So as a guy who is accomplished and has done that long, how does a program director reach Jim Rome?
Because you guys, I still consider you a programmer on some level, despite what you're doing right now. You guys all have different takes, and you're in that chair for a reason. And if you're a program director, you have your own needs and focus, and I want to be on your radio station. Mm-hmm. I appreciate everybody that carries my radio show, because there are other good shows, there are choices. I want to make sure you're happy with my show. I'm giving you what you need. And if you've got something to say where you're like, hey, listen, can you think about this, or can you do this? This would really help us. I'm all ears. Mm-hmm. Believe me, I do not have all the answers, and I'm looking to evolve and stay fresh and competitive. And yeah, I've been in the game a long time. There's something to be said for that, but that does not mean that I've got all the answers, because I don't.
One of the benefits of doing it as long as you have is you're able to build these benchmarks and these identity traits, like the music, the smack off, the emails, and the way that the audience connects with you. How do you determine whether something has staying power or when it's run its course?
That's the challenge because, look, it's been said a million times, but it's true, right? You're either going backwards or you're going forward. Nobody's maintaining. Nobody's staying the same. And what do? You want to stay true to who you are, and you want to stay with what's tried and true, but you don't want to get tired.
Mm-hmm.
You don't want to get stagnant. You don't want to get complacent. You don't want to have, quote, a show that has matured. Hey, listen, you know what gets me up every single morning? I'm in this battle now, all right? So I'm not the young guy coming up. I'm the guy that, I'm winning this war of attrition, I guess. I'm the guy who's been around. When I first came up, everybody I interviewed was older than me, and now I'm interviewing guys' kids. So I understand what's going on. The world has changed. I want to remain relevant and competitive. I want to hit another home run. I want to stay in this thing. And the way to do that is not to do the same things that I have always done. So you don't want to kill and retire the things that work, but you don't want to keep doing the same thing over and over and over again. Like the Smack-Off. The Smack-Off still works. It's still vibrant. It's still real. That's not one of those things like, hey, Rome, that's pretty tired and played. Get a new act, bro. That still works.
Right.
I don't need to retire that.
Yeah.
Email, what you bring up? Email is not exactly state-of-the-art technology.
Yeah.
The email may have lived past its usefulness.
Yeah. Well, you're using Twitter now, and that anytime I hear it, I'm like, Jim, take a tweet. You know, like, because you're using Twitter anyway. Like, I listened to today's show, you're talking about Twitter, and I'm going, yeah, that is an evolving thing, and that doesn't mean that you cut it out, but you're using Twitter a lot more now.
Twitter works, and I've used Twitter the last several years, and it matters now. Twitter mm-hmm. matters. Twitter matters a lot. I'd even argue that this fight we have, by the time this airs, the fight would have happened, but McGregor and Mayweather, that fight might have been made from social media.
Mm-hmm.
All right, so like, I'd love to say to you that I'm not chasing things, and I'd rather set the agenda, but the fact of the matter is, that fight got made because of social media, probably.
Yeah.
Social media is very, very important. Twitter still matters. Now, is Twitter going to be what it is now in 5 years? I don't know. There might be the next Twitter, the next thing. I don't know. MySpace was pretty big for a while.
Yeah.
So who knows what the next thing is, but you want to make sure that when the next thing happens, that you're ready to capitalize.
A big part of your show are the clones. And you know, look, there are people in our industry who are going to know the story inside and out, but there are a number of people in our industry who know you have clones and don't know how it happened. So when did this become the phenomenon that it did, and how did it evolve?
You know, I think because when I started, I had a different approach, and it was very polarizing. The people who liked it had never heard anything like it and loved it. And the people who didn't like it really did not like it and hated it. But my fan base was extremely loyal, extremely rabid, and extremely active. I mean, they were aggressive, and I encouraged it. You know, I called the show The Jungle.
Right.
Not like jungle foliage. I felt like it was urban. I felt like it was a concrete jungle. And I was coming in, I was being very aggressive in the callers. I think they liked it. And then I encouraged them to be aggressive, and everybody's coming for everybody. But the thing was, because I had a certain vernacular, a certain way of speaking, a certain vocabulary, they started to emulate me, and they started to sound like me. And somebody once said, these guys are a bunch of clones, man. They sound exactly like him. Him and his following, they're all clones. And then clones kind of became a derisive term early on. But this is just the way I see my audience and my folks. They're my clones. They're the clones.
So as time's gone on, now you've done this for over 25, 30 years. How has sports radio changed from where you were when you started to where it is now? What are the biggest differences?
I mean, the biggest difference is just the numbers and the platforms and where it is. I mean, it went from, there were just a couple of these shows, literally just a few national shows and a few networks that did this, and not that many stations, to more and more stations,
mm-hmm.
And then the thing just kind of blew out. It's no longer just a radio station thing. Now there are podcasts and there are blogs, and you can get this content on your phone, on your laptop, on your computer, in your car. The thing is just so gigantic, and there's so many people competing and pushing content. It is everywhere. Everywhere.
One thing, you focus on a lot of issues built around sports, and you talk to people involved in sports. You don't go as deep into the social issues, politics part as some other shows do. Curious, where you stand on that. Is that a good thing for our business that it's starting to open up that those floodgates, or do you think that that's starting to take away the fun of why we listen to sports?
I don't want to say I would take exception. I've always hit on social issues, and there's always been kind of a moral thread that runs through my show. Mm-hmm. It's not that I won't go there, but I'm not going to get into real political issues. Mm-hmm. Now, that's not to say that I don't have political opinions. That's right. Not to say I don't have political takes. I think I take pride in the fact that if I were to say to a listener, hey, do you even know which way I vote? Do you even know which political party I have? I think many people would say no. And I'm glad that's not what you tune into me for. But believe me, I'm going to hit the issues. Mm-hmm. The other day when I came back from vacation and I started the show off. So imagine I've been off for 2 weeks. And I've got lots of things that I want to talk about, lots of takes I want to get to, lots of things that I've been burning on while I've been on vacation. And I start the show talking Nazis. You know, my feeling was, and I said this, I said, I got to tell you something, clones. Yeah, I know who I am. I know what they pay me to do. I know why you tune in. But let me tell you something. I never thought in my worst day that in my entire career, I would ever have to talk about the existence of Nazis. Nazis. But there are Nazis amongst us, and I've got a thought or two on the fact that there are Nazis. I led the show with it. So I'll pick my spots, and I'll hit the social issues as I see fit. But in terms of politics, I generally steer clear because I think that's not why people tune in. And to be real honest about it, if you have a really strong political slant, you're going to lose 50% of your audience right then and there.
Right.
So if that's not what they're paying you to do, why would you do that?
They come to you for an escape from those things, right. Not to hear more bad news.
And if I'm going to piss off enough of them with just sports takes, I don't think I need to get into their religion or their politics. And it's not my place, and it's really not my concern at all. Now, if race and or religion are woven into sports, and that's a factor, we will talk about
right,
that.
Right, like the Tebow thing. Like, that's got to come up. You know?
That's a factor. If I see a guy like Hugh Freeze, who is leading with his faith and his religion, and the guy's a hypocrite and a liar, and he's calling escort services, then we're talking religion on the show as it relates to him. Dr. Harry Edwards is a noted sports sociologist that I've had on the show years and years and years. I like the issues. I like the social issues. I will not steer clear of that, but I'm not going to hit you with my political slant.
I want to hit you with a couple quick hits to wrap this up, but first I have one last thing. You had the infamous line, have a take, don't suck, right? Everybody knew that meant you've got to bring your A game to Jim Rome's show. Jim Rome is all about opinion. He's in your face with opinion. You look at the TV world now, it's all about debate. It's all about opinion. Is that good? Do you like where TV has changed from where you might have been in 10, 20 years ago and seeing how it's developed?
I've made my whole career on that. So believe me, I'm fine with it.
Yeah.
I'm fine with that. And I'm still in the game and I want to be in the game. And since that's the way I conduct my business, I think that's a good thing. Where I would draw the line is I'm not a big hot take guy. I'm not throwing crap up against the wall to see what will stick. Or I'm not a guy who's going to say, hey, you know, that's a multi-host show right there. Here's what we'll do. You take that side, and I'll take that side. Or I can argue either side. It doesn't matter. I mean, I say what I mean, and I mean what I say. And you may not like it, but I really do believe it. You know, this whole thing about, hey, Roman, is he really like that? For better or for worse, I'm really like this. I don't go home and talk smack to my wife and my kids, and I don't hit them with manual buzzers. But this is essentially who I am and what I do. So this whole debate thing, and yeah, I like it because I've always been about have a take, don't suck. Don't call my show and say, hey, I have a question. What do you think about the Orioles' chances this year? I'll take your answer off the air. That to me was not good content. Have a take, don't suck. Here's my take. What's your take? Let's let it rip.
All right, so let's wrap up on this. Couple of quick hits. The first thought that pops to your mind to four quick questions, okay? Number one, you have two boys, Jake and Logan, right? More likely to follow in dad's footsteps as a sports radio host, Jake or Logan?
I'd love to give you a quick answer, and I can, but it's an interesting question. Logan knows more about sports. Logan is more analytical, but Jake is more like his old man. He can get up in front of a group. He's not afraid. Jake's a nicer guy than I am, but he's not afraid of the spotlight. I think he'd like to be that guy.
Jim Rome has one call to make to fill in and host the jungle. Which fill-in host gets his call first?
Boy, that's a hard question. That is a really hard question. Which fill-in host gets the call first? How much time do we have? Is it an hour before the show or is it a week before the show?
You've got time to plan.
I can't. God, it's such a cop-out. How can I pick? They're like my kids, Jason. I can't pick one over the other. I love all the guys that do the show because, they're willing to do the show.
All right, so who are the two battling for that call?
They're not. I can't do it. I like all the guys. The Sklars came on today. They do an amazing job. Man, Grant Napier's got fire.
Yeah.
I love him. Joey Vendetta is a guy who comes at it a different way. They're all different, and they all approach it differently. I like anybody who respects the opportunity, the brand, and the clones. I can't give you two, much less one.
Okay. One area of hosting that Jim Rome still needs to be better at.
Everything, right? I mean, everything. The takes could be sharper. They could be smarter. The interviews could be better. You know, I could be tighter in my analysis. There's nothing about this that I can't still improve on, and I'm trying to every single day.
All right, so the final one, and this is probably going to be hard to answer, but I'm going to try it anyway.
The first two were.
The most proud professional moment of your career.
Wow. That is really hard. Really, really hard. I can tell you there were certain flashpoints where I was proud. Something I'm extremely proud of was Pat Tillman's family asked me to be the keynote speaker at his memorial.
Mm-hmm.
Pat and I didn't have a close relationship, but we had a relationship. Pat came on the show when he was in college. Pat came on the show when he was in the NFL. We had great interviews. I would talk about Pat. And when he passed and the nation was so shocked by that, when there was a memorial down the street from where his family lived, the family asked me to be the keynote speaker or to head up that memorial. That was as proud a moment as I've ever had in my career.
The Jim Rome Show airs on CBS Sports Radio weekdays 12 to 3 Eastern, 9 to 12 Pacific. Brand new podcast, right?
Yes.
Just came out.
Thank you.
JimRome.com, and you can find them on Twitter at Jim Rome. This was a blast. I appreciate you having me in the jungle.
Jason, that was so fun. It was really good to see you. It's amazing what you've done with your career, and I'm glad that I was important enough or interesting enough or you had nobody else to talk to. I don't know why you did it, but that was a blast. That was fun. Thank you.
This is the Barrett Sports Media Podcast.
I hope you guys enjoyed that chat with Jim Rome as much as I did. I found it very interesting when he talked about the early days of his career. Not everyone in our business has a clear idea of who and what they want to be, but when you figure it out and are willing to put in the work to get to the top, great things can happen. Jim Rome is living proof. I also thought he was candid and shared some great insight from what he discovered when facing adversity for the first time due to the well-documented Jim Everett saga. For a radio lifer like myself, I particularly valued his feedback on remaining open to coaching, what matters most to him and a producer, how he feels about the embrace debate format taking over sports television, as well as how he determines whether or not content or a specific benchmark has run out of gas. Having witnessed the way Jim conducts himself as a businessman behind closed doors, I can't tell you how important that is to your employer. Many in programming circles stress over the content, ratings, ego battles with competitors and colleagues, and I'm not saying those aren't important. But we also assume the monetization challenges are for the other side of the building. The world doesn't work that way anymore, folks. You've got to be committed to selling content, ads, the value of your personal brand, and you've got to be willing to invest your time to maintain and recruit potential clients. I can tell you the way Jim approached affiliates 12 years ago was much better than I had witnessed during my time at ESPN Radio. It surprised me. And keep in mind, this was 12 years ago, way before it became the priority that it is now. If there's anything I've learned from that, it's that doing good business and being a strong partner is timeless. When certain aspects of your product aren't going in the right direction, it helps to have people on your side who know who you are and how committed you are to helping them win. And sometimes those things mean much more than a good ratings book. And on that note, that's going to bring us to the end of today's episode. My thanks again to Jim Rome, his behind-the-scenes crew, and Craig Kitchen for their hospitality. If you get a chance, check out awfulannouncing.com. They did a story on the subscription model and whether or not it's built to last. For those of you out there who wonder about the future of monetizing content, I thought this piece particularly stood out, so be sure to check it out. Along those lines, I recently subscribed to The Athletic. I've been a big fan of Ken Rosenthal's work for a long time, and I enjoyed reading Tim Kawakami during my time in the Bay Area. Plus, I've got to support my guy, John Middlecoff, who previously worked for me and is now writing for The Athletic. So far, I got to tell you, first impressions, pretty strong. I love reading a website that doesn't have a ton of ads on it, and I think the writing has been exceptional. Will I remain as excited about it in 6 months as I am right now? I don't know that yet. But so far, so good. If you are a fan of good content, I encourage you to check out The Athletic. A quick reminder, if you're running a company and feel one of your sports radio brands could benefit from outside guidance and analysis, I do work as a sports radio consultant. I'm involved currently with 9 different brands and have a passion for what I do. To find out how I can make a difference for your group, visit the website sportsradiopd.com to learn more about my services and to locate my contact information. In the words of Kid Rock, if it sounds good, you'll hear it. If it looks good, you'll see it. If it's marketed right, you'll buy it. But if it's real, you'll feel it. So be authentic in everything you do. Until next time, I'm Jason Barrett. Thanks for stopping by.
I'd say that was a pretty successful broadcast.
Thank you for listening to the Barrett Sports Media Podcast. To stay updated on the latest sports media news, follow Jason on Twitter at SportsRadioPD and visit our website, sportsradiopd.com.